Welcome to the Ortho Activist Podcast. I'm your host, Bradley Coffey, and I am the Manager of Government Affairs at the American Alliance of Orthopedic Executives. The episodes in this series will focus on the personalities in Congress, policy debates in the legislative and executive branches, and how they affect orthopedic practice management. The information contained in these podcasts comes from my interactions on Capitol Hill, as well as the newspapers, blogs, and websites covering healthcare policy. A quick note, if you have ideas for topics that you'd like covered on this podcast, please email AAOE's government affairs staff at advocacy@AAOE.net to provide suggestions.
To build a future of quality health care, we must trust patients and doctors to make medical decisions and empower them with better information and better options. We share a common goal: making healthcare more affordable and accessible for all Americans.
Now is the season for action. Now is when we must bring the best ideas of both parties together and show the American people that we can still do what we were sent here to do. Now is the time to deliver on healthcare.
On this episode, I'm joined by AAOE Advocacy Council Chair Joel James. Joel is the Director of Public and Government Affairs at Signature Medical Group, a multi-specialty physician group with locations in St. Louis and Kansas City, Missouri. On this episode, Joel and I will be discussing a few of the issues on the Advocacy Council's 2018 policy agenda. So Joel, I want to thank you for being here with me, and we're going to talk a little bit about healthcare reforms. So these include physician-led payment reforms, interoperability of electronic health records, medical liability reforms, and protections for those with pre-existing conditions. So why did the Advocacy Council feel that these four topics were important to include in the 2018 policy agenda? They seem kind of like different issues, like they don't really fit together. But
right.
What was the Advocacy Council's rationale?
Yeah. That's a great question, Brad, and frankly, I have no idea. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. Anyway, actually, I thought the committee did a really great job. It did surprise me, protections for those with pre-existing conditions. But in a way, I have to say, I think our council was prescient in a way. Because these were decided a few weeks ago, as you know, but just last week, HHS Secretary Azar made what I think is a groundbreaking speech before the Federation of American Hospitals. And if the listeners haven't read that, I strongly suggest you Google Azar's speech to the Federation of American Hospitals. But the point is, he laid out four really big areas of emphasis: giving consumers greater control over their healthcare data by improving interoperability, encouraging price transparency for both payers and providers, right? So utilizing experimental models in Medicare and Medicaid to improve value, and removing what he called government burdens that impede the value-based transformation. Now, not all these issues speak to that, but in a very large sense, they kind of do. Certainly physician-led payment reforms have been a key in when we think of bundle payments, for example, a key model to allow physicians to take greater control of overall care and design of care for their patients for a complete, surgical, post-surgical episode. And that's been critical. Interoperability is certainly a very high priority now for not only HHS, but for the administration. So Seema Verma and Jared Kushner have rolled out a plan together, and the name of it escapes me exactly, but they have a term for it, my health data or something like that. But the idea is that they want consumers, patients, to actually have and control their own healthcare data, and how that will be done, there's no real you know, they haven't really trotted that out yet, but you can imagine getting, you know, companies like Google and Apple and others involved in this, where you would develop a smart card, for example, with a chip, and every time you went to a provider, it downloaded your information, what you were there for, and you took that chip back, you took that card back, and you put it in your wallet like you do your debit card, and instead of carrying around the balance on your bank account, it carries around your healthcare data, and you control that. You have that. And that removes the idea of, you know, of information blocking and, you know, I don't have your healthcare record, or I have to get it faxed, you know, from your last provider, which is, we're still faxing this stuff. So it's like crazy. Liability reform is just one of those things that's always at top of mind. For physicians, it's certainly an issue. Politically, though, I mean, Republicans are more apt to move toward a tort reform type of environment. Democrats are more concerned about the rights that consumers or patients have and not be blocked from rightful litigation and recovery from misdeeds in healthcare and other services. But it's certainly something we need to pay attention to and help where reforms make sense. And then protections for those with pre-existing conditions, that did surprise me coming from the council, but I do think it speaks to the fact that we're also worried about our patients being able to afford care and be able to have the appropriate coverage for conditions of which, you know, they may have very little control over. So I think it's appropriate. And again, I think the council did a great job in coming up with these issues that are now being very much on the forefront of conversation among healthcare players and as well as policymakers.
Great. I would wholeheartedly agree. I think this is a great set of issues for AUE to be advocating on, and it really makes me proud to have those kinds of issues in my back pocket when I'm going into these congressional offices. But I wanted to ask, what do you believe the outlook is for success on these issues? You know, are there any issues currently, are there any pieces of legislation currently percolating? And what do you think the outlook for those would be?
Well, I think when it comes to physician-led payment reforms, you know, we've seen the legislative process and know that there's a lot that has to go right for something to get into the statutes. Is it something we can deliver? Is another question. But I think the fact that for instance, this next bundle payment initiative that's going to be rolled out, BPCI Advanced, that clearly did recognize the value of physician-led health and physician-led payment reform in that it only allows physicians and acute care hospitals to be direct risk takers in those models. In other words, it was essentially the model two of the original BPCI, where physicians and hospitals were managing acute and post-acute care episodes. It didn't involve only post-acute care providers like nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities, and so forth, to be able to be participants directly, only physicians and hospitals. But I still think we have to be wary of where hospitals seem to get precedent in certain issues, and that's certainly a problem with CJR taking precedence, at least right now, in the design of BPCI Advanced from physicians for episodes that are done in a CJR hospital. In other words, they would fall out of the physician's bundle and go to the CJR hospital, which we think is unfair. And we've obviously been advocating for a change in that. But I do think things are moving certainly in that direction. And with what Secretary Azar said, and also having disruptive models that move toward value, I think physicians are in a much better position to provide those kinds of, you know, disruptive innovations than, say, you know, really large health systems, which are more like steering a super tanker, you know, through an obstacle course. It's, they can't move as quickly. And this environment, as we know, is changing quickly. I think interoperability, given Azar's speech and also the emphasis the administration is now placing on that, I think they're taking it out of the hands of just letting IT people get along and play together. I think they're moving in a whole new direction. And I think they're basically going to take it out of the hands of the IT world and do more in terms of who can bring us the best model to allow healthcare data to be controlled by the consumer. You know, liability reform has passed the House, but I think it might be packaged in with another piece of legislation before the end of the year. But again, Democrats again are very leery of marginalizing patients in the process of being able to litigate issues over malpractice. So I don't know that it will gain a whole lot of traction. And I've heard things both ways, whether Congress will actually make another attempt at taking a run at the ACA. I think the election result in Pennsylvania this week, where a Democrat won in a staunchly conservative district that Trump won by 20 points, points to the fact that people are really changing their minds about some of the Republican / Trump agenda. And, infringing more on their ability to acquire or have affordable health care, which is now the view generally of many folks. Now they view, it's funny how they view the ACA more favorably now in general population surveys than they did the first 3 years it was rolled out. So with the threat of it going away now, it wasn't that crappy. You know, it's actually not that bad. So whether the Republicans want to risk taking that on in election year, I think it could be iffy, though. I've heard some people say that they want to take another run at it, but I don't know. It's not like there's not enough going on in Washington, right? Have to add this to it.
And I would be interested to see, because as you know, Republicans are not going to pass a budget this year, so they won't have the option of reconciliation. So I'd be interested to see exactly how they, if they were planning on doing this, how they plan to go about with an actual repeal. For those that aren't aware, last year's attempts to repeal the ACA was done via budget reconciliation, which is a fast-track method of getting legislation through the Senate with simply a majority vote rather than the normal 60. That's interesting to me to hear that there are still some rumblings of this happening. So I did want to know, how can members help AAOE be successful on these particular issues?
Well, for anyone that's listened to the other podcasts, they'll know what I'm going to say, right? It's like, the council and Brad especially works very diligently to have tools out there on the website that folks, members can use to speak to their own members, their congressional members, their senators, their staffs. about any of these issues. There's lots of resources out there people can draw from. I mean, it literally takes only a few minutes to try to make a phone call and set up a time. Either you can visit the office, invite them into your practice. You know, Brad does a great job lobbying on behalf of our membership in AOE. But he's like one dude, you know, and there's hundreds of members of Congress and Senate and their staffs. And we have a very powerful organization. I mean, we have practices in every state and small and large. So we cover a lot of territory, some in hospitals, some in, you know, private physician groups. So we have a huge bandwidth ourselves. So if we want to be successful, we need more than Brad and really just the Advocacy Council doing this. It really does take our membership to really be involved.
Yes, I echo those comments. You know, it tends to be that constituent communications matter more than anything that a lobbyist can say to a legislator. You know, their ultimate goal is to get reelected unless they've resigned or they've decided not to run in the next election. But most members of Congress, their ultimate goal is to get reelected, and they can't do that without their constituents. So they really pay attention to what you have to say. Even if they don't take any action on it, they are listening to you more than they would listen to myself or any other lobbyist that goes to meet with them. So,
yeah,
Joel,
that's
I want to thank you for being here with us. We are out of time, but thank you for being here. I'll let you get back to the work that you're doing with Signature, and I encourage anyone who has any more wants more information about these the issues on the policy agenda, you know, go to the AUE website and the Government Affairs page. They'll be listed up there. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact myself at advocacy@aue.net.